Good morning. We continue with big news from three sports on Get Up, beginning with baseball, a comprehensive plan to return sooner than expected. All the details right off the top. Then football. And in this hour, Tom Brady with cryptic comments. Was he taking a shot at his former coach? You'll hear them. You can decide. And the NBA commissioner offers his thoughts on return and what he knows now that he didn't when he suspended the season. You'll hear from Adam Silver in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol. And as we get up and go, we do so with three of our top guys, Jeff Passan, Adrian Wojnarowski, Adam Schefter, standing by with big developments in each of the sports that they cover. And Passan, you're up first with baseball from last night and a comprehensive, detailed report that you have up on ESPN.com right now about a plan for baseball to potentially return as soon as May. What are the key points for the fans who were just waking up?
Well, Greeny, the key point is that this has the backing of federal health officials, and that is the most important thing at this point as Major League Baseball looks to get back. It's not only federal health officials, though. Major League Baseball is behind the plan, and the top brass at the Players Association is as well, to go out to Arizona, take everybody out there, and essentially create a biosphere in which nobody is allowed in, nobody is allowed out, and every game is played at the stadiums around the Phoenix area. Now, there are a ton of logistical issues that need to be taken care of before this plan can be played out to fruition and see if they can actually get it to work. But at this point, having that tentpole of the players, of MLB, and of the federal health officials really gives them confidence that this is a plan that, while difficult, could ultimately work.
We should point out for the fans who were not aware, because they hold spring training in Arizona, there are enough stadiums there to accommodate many games. You could be holding multiple games on any given day. You could play multiple games in each of these stadiums. What are the biggest roadblocks here? If they were to decide this is the plan we want to follow, what are the biggest hurdles they have to jump over?
Yeah, the logistical issues are really present, and it comes down in a lot of cases to the early testing. Can we get quick testing? Can we create this bubble that we're trying to safely without posing a health risk to either the players, the managers, the coaches, the umpires, all of the people who need to be inside of it, as well as the public writ large? That is the most important part of this. I think beyond that, you know, you look at something like the weather in Phoenix, Greeny, in June and July and potentially August. I mean, it is hot there. And the idea that you're going to be playing games in the afternoon or in the early evening, I just don't know how realistic this is. But ultimately, what this comes back to is baseball recognizing that this might be its best shot. That if this plan does not work, we might not see baseball at all in 2020. So let's put all of our resources toward this. Let's convince the players that isolating from their families for potentially months at a time is something that is in their best interest as well as the sports.
Speaking of the players, because obviously they'd have to be on board, everyone would have to be on board with essentially separating from the rest of civilization, including their families, for a period of months here. Would you share, for those who were just joining us, the text exchange you had with one player? I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, you know, this plan's been percolating around for a couple of weeks now as MLB officials have been speaking with people in Washington, federal health officials, about its viability. And, you know, as it was coming more into focus, I asked a player and said to him, would you separate from your family? And this is a guy who's married and has children. Would you separate from your family for potentially months at a time? And his initial reaction was, no way, not happening. Can't do it. How can I, in the middle of a pandemic, leave my family alone like that? Yesterday, I get a text from him, says, talk to my wife. And she says, as long as I'm getting paid, and this is the only path to ensure that I do get paid, we'll survive. And that, I think, is, I think the initial reaction from him is shared far and wide inside of the sport. And I think that secondary reaction is going to be very commonplace as well, because look, if they don't play, they are not getting paid this year. And there are literally billions of dollars for players at stake right now.
All right. There's so much in this. Again, the report is very detailed. I strongly recommend it. It's up on ESPN.com right now. And in about 25 minutes, we will talk about it and more with Alex Rodriguez. will join me 9:30 Eastern today, A-Rod, with his reaction to the possibility of essentially an entire baseball season being played in a bubble in Arizona, potentially starting as soon as May. Jeff Passan, outstanding work. Our next stop is the National Football League, and that means Adam Schefter, who with the report yesterday that the league has landed on a decision to hold the draft virtually, meaning they will not reopen the facilities. Everyone will be in their own homes, and they'll go from there. How did they land on that decision, Schefty?
Greeny, this was something that was building in the league in recent days, and it became the expectation over the weekend when you spoke to high-level officials on multiple teams. They all said that we're going to be drafting from home. There are too many federal guidelines, state mandates, different rules in different places to make it such that one team could expect to be in its training facility as much as it wanted to be, and another could be at home. So rather than get into that scenario, the NFL issued a ruling that basically said everybody is working from home. And I think another thing that people were expecting, which has been met with mixed reviews, is that it'll be basically each person for him or herself in his or her own home drafting virtually. And that is a changeup because coaches want to be with GMs and GMs want to be with the pro personnel directors and the pro personnel directors want to be with the college scouting directors. And these teams are used to having great communication. Now, you can do it through teleconferencing, but there are already teams worried about having their Zoom teleconference hacked in by another team. That's been a question that's been raised right now. There are issues where other teams have said it's not fair that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones in the same family get to be together in the same home on the draft day. And so I think there are going to be more teams that raise more issues here, and this is where it's at right now. And I think some teams have also wondered why the league keeps making rulings rather than saying, let's just sit back and see where we are before we come up with something. Here's where we are today. This is what we're planning. But we're open to other ideas, and we'll see what develops as the draft draws closer, now 2 weeks from Thursday night.
You brought up a very interesting point earlier this morning that I'd love you to share again here. I had Tom Telesco, the GM of the Chargers, with me a little while ago, and he said the piece of this that they have not really had a chance to practice, of course, is the way they will communicate with other teams when this goes on. And you brought up an interesting point about one way it could change the draft.
Listen, I think it's going to be harder for teams who are on the clock when they're going through their teleconference to reach out to other teams. It's already complicated as it is when the members of the organization are in the same room working together. Now, I think it's going to be more challenging to make some of these trades. And usually we see teams jump up and all around the draft board. And I still think we'll see some of that. There's no doubt. But I don't know that we're going to see quite as much this year of teams jumping around due to the communication issues that have arisen this year that nobody could have foreseen. And again, we've never seen a virtual draft, so we don't know how it's going to work. But there are people who feel like communication will be that much more challenging, which will make it that much more difficult to pull off some of the draft day trades that have been a regular part of drafts in recent years.
All right, enormous news from the NFL. Again, it could make the draft is already going to look completely different. Now it may feel different for the fans as well. Schefty, outstanding. Thank you. Thanks, and then man. There is news from the NBA this morning as well. Adam Silver, the commissioner, says don't expect a decision on when or if the season will resume until May at the earliest. The NBA was the first league to suspend play back on March 13th. What has Silver learned since then? That's the question, and he answered it this way in an interview last night on the NBA's Twitter account.
Fact is, now sitting here today, I know less in a way than I did then.
Wow.
I think in some ways, just as I listen to the public health experts and the people that are advising us, the virus is potentially moving faster than maybe we had thought at that point, and that it therefore may peak earlier. What that means in terms of our ability to come back at some point in late spring or summer is still unknown to me. And essentially what I've told my folks over the last week is that we should just accept that at least for the month of April, we won't be in a position to make any decisions. I don't think that necessarily means on May 1st we will be, but at least I know, I think just to settle everyone down a little bit, it doesn't mean that internally, both the league and in discussions with our players and the teams, we aren't looking at many different scenarios for restarting the season. But I think it honestly is just too early, given what's happening right now.
All right, so we bring in our insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, what are the priorities here? Like, as they sit, you hear him say he's talking to people, they're working on all the scenarios. What are the priorities for the NBA as they look forward at whatever it is they may be able to do?
Greeny, start with testing
and the league having access to rapid response testing in a bubble scenario, perhaps in Las Vegas. What the league needs to have, and certainly what it believes it will likely take to return to play, is the ability that if a player were to test positive for the coronavirus while the teams were in a bubble playing in Vegas, that you then wouldn't have to isolate the entire team for 2 weeks. You wouldn't have to pull them out like you had to do when Rudy Gobert tested positive, Donovan Mitchell, other players around the league, that they would be able to separate that player from the team, test everyone else, and have rapid response, have, you know, continual testing within that bubble, and then be able to carry on. Without that, I think it's going to be difficult for a return, and that, more than anything else, I think, is at the crux of the NBA's ability, and I think it sounds like that's true in baseball, too, to return to play.
The NFL has the luxury of time. Their season doesn't even begin until the fall. Baseball even comparatively has the luxury of time because their next season, let's say, the 2021 season, is still well over a year away. Basketball was practically at the end of their season, and they have a whole other one looming. So how does that impact the timetable they may be looking at here?
Well, they would like to have a season wrapped up, a champion crowned by Labor Day weekend, early September. That's the hope within the NBA if they could return. You know, and another real issue that teams in the league are talking through is how much of a ramp-up time do they need if they were to resume play to get the players in some kind of a training camp situation before they put them out in, you know, regular season games and then the playoffs, because they know that the risk of injury is heightened when players have been, you know, largely inactive for 2-3 months by the time they return. Players can't go to their facilities and work out right now. They're really limited to home gymnasiums. And so teams want to know that there's going to be enough time to get players back in shape because they don't want to risk serious injuries to players in this shortened run potentially, and then obviously carrying into a next season that's going to start with a very short offseason. Those are all considerations for the league.
Woj, extraordinary. Thank you. And Shefty and Jeff Passan, again, a day filled with big news and maybe a glimmer of hope for those of us who would love to see sports come back. As we continue here this morning, in this hour of Get Up, Tom Brady speaks and tells us why he chose the Bucks and what he expects to give them. You'll want to hear some of the things he said, and you will. And then, with baseball at least laying out plans for a return, will the players go along with the strict rules being discussed? We'll ask A-Rod what he thinks. He's live at the bottom of the hour. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Coming up in about 13 minutes, Alex Rodriguez live talking about baseball's plan to return possibly as soon as May under extraordinary circumstances. Don't miss A-Rod with me live in just a few minutes here on ESPN. Meanwhile, I want to read you a piece of the article that Tom Brady wrote for the Players Tribune. Brady explains why he left New England after 20 years and what was behind his decision in picking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And there are any number of things in the piece that are extraordinarily interesting. But the one that jumped out to me the most was when he wrote, "They of the Buccaneers welcome me as one of their own. They want to listen to what I have to say. I'm excited to be embraced fully for what I can bring to the Bucks. In turn, I'm ready to embrace fully a team that is confident in what I do and what I bring and is willing to go on this ride with me. I've got Neek and RC with me here this morning. Neek, did the sentence, they want to listen to what I have to say, oh, and Shefty's with us as well. Neek, did that sentence jump out to you as much as it jumped out to me?
Absolutely. I think when I first read the sentence, I thought it was no big deal, but when it's coming from Tom Brady, you know how experienced he is with dealing with the media. And it seems like ever since that Jim Gray interview a few years ago, when Jim Gray asked him if he felt like he was appreciated and he said he wasn't going to, or he pleased the fifth, he wasn't going to answer the question. Ever since then, it seems like he's been leaving breadcrumbs. And it seems like that's what this is. This continues to be like these little bit of passive aggressive, easily kind of plausible deniability level shots back at New England and Bill Belichick.
What do you think, RC?
Man, I told y'all this last week. That man wanted to be treated like a 10. He was tired of being treated like a 6. He wanted to be heard. He wanted to have more influence. He wanted Bill Belichick to listen. And when you listen or when you read those words aloud, that's what I get. He says they've embraced me fully. How do you know? You haven't been to their facility. But what he does know is they've already asked him what he wants to do. Is there anything you need in the playbook? What type of things make you comfortable, Tom? And I said it before, BA knows how to make a quarterback feel valuable, knows how to make a quarterback feel wanted. And that's what Tom Brady wants after two decades of dealing with Bill Belichick, dealing with the hoodie. And so now he has that opportunity. And I believe before free agency hit, that was going to have a large part to do with where he picked to go. And obviously now we are seeing from the breadcrumbs, like Dominique mentioned, that's what he wanted.
How about you, Shefty? What did you take away from this?
When you spoke to teams around the league, what seemed to be the consensus was that Tom Brady was looking for a quote-unquote collaborative approach. And I think that was the key buzzword that kept coming up. You heard it over and over. I even think that he brought up that word collaborative during his conference call with the Buccaneers writers. So I don't know that it's a shot so much at anybody. It's just what he was looking for as he's making a fresh start, right? 20 years with one organization, with one crew of people. He wanted a change. I think they wanted a change. Everybody was fine going in a different direction. I think he's just laying out exactly some of the things that he was looking for. I don't look at it so much as a shot at what he didn't have, so much as what he's looking for as he starts anew in Tampa, which, by the way, Greeny, unveils new uniforms at 1 o'clock today. We can only hope we see the old creamsicles at 1 o'clock.
Are they going to just put Brady on the helmet? I mean, that would be... Go ahead, RC.
But, like, I think that's the thing. Adam said they wanted a change. The Patriots wanted a change. I think it's the exact opposite. The Patriots didn't want to change. Tom Brady wanted a collaborative relationship. He wanted something that we were in together. We were going to have as much input on each side as to who the New England Patriots were going to be. And as an organization, as a coaching staff, as the head coach, I don't believe they were willing to do that. So it wasn't that they said, you know what? We don't want Tom Brady. We don't think Tom Brady can play. Let's go with Jared Stidham. It was saying that if Tom wanted a different type of relationship other than the relationship that has worked for us for two decades, we are not willing to do that here. Go get it elsewhere. And that's what Tom Brady was seeking. And it seems that he has found in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, both can be true at the same time. Shefty, just while I have an extra second here, what do we know at this moment about their plans at the quarterback situation? We were going to have Mel in here today, and we were going to go through a lot of these things. Right now, their quarterback room is pretty limited. It's Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer. They'll add someone else. What level, what caliber, what do you expect them to be doing about that third person?
I think right now you're looking at Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer competing for that starting job. I think there's no doubt they're going to draft a quarterback somewhere. When they released Cody Kessler last week, that sends out a clear, unmistakable opinion. Hey, we're going to draft somebody here. That's going to be the third quarterback in the room. And if there's another option on the street that just happens to be sitting around here in a few weeks, a cheap veteran at that point in time, maybe you add him. But if you're waiting for Cam Newton or Jameis Winston to wind up in New England, that's not going to happen this year. So what you're looking at is Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer and the quarterback that they draft squaring off for that starting job in Foxborough this summer, assuming that we have training camp there.
What do you think of that, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I'm upset at Adam for killing my hopes, dashing my hopes that Cam Newton would end up there. That would be fun. But I do understand. I see that they've gone too far down the road, and they are already committed to Jarrett Stidham. And I know I've heard people say often that Jarrett Stidham is a guy that they really believe in. But I know they're going to draft a quarterback, and I do think that this is going to be a major step back for them this season.
Go ahead, Jeffy.
Well, Green, the other thing I was going to say is, and this is true really of any team, with no offseason program, it's going to be harder than ever before for a rookie quarterback to step in and make his mark. So when we say that New England is going to draft a rookie and he'll be the third quarterback in that mix, he's out of the mix for a starting job. So really the starting job comes down to Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. And I don't care whether it's Joe Burrow or Tua or Justin Herbert, whoever, I think it's going to be more challenging for those guys to play early on than ever before, which is why you may see a team like Cincinnati hold on to Andy Dalton because there's no offseason program. So he has more value to them for 1 year in the last year of his contract than he does for a fourth or fifth round draft pick.
It makes a lot of sense. And I keep reminding myself that the notion that Jarrett Stidham will be great is a lot less unlikely, which is a double negative, but it makes sense. It's more likely than the notion that the same moment in his career, Tom Brady was going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. He was a sixth round pick. So crazy things have happened, and they've happened there. Meanwhile, for the 41st straight year, the NFL draft is here on ESPN. It's also on the NFL Network. And the College Game Day crew will be on ABC again this year, covering it from the college perspective. It all comes your way Thursday, April 23rd through the 25th. All 3 days will be on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and the ESPN app. All right, coming up, how would Mike Trout and Bryce Harper feel about playing their sport for an entire season away from their families? Alex Rodriguez answers that question and more. A-Rod Live, Nat, get up, ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Back on Get Up with a big story this morning. Major League Baseball working on a plan to return as early as May, playing at stadiums without fans. All of it in the greater Phoenix area. Players, coaches, and essential personnel would be sequestered at hotels and live essentially in a bubble. Our Jeff Passan broke the story. Here are some of his details live earlier here on Get Up.
What they're doing is laying things out right now to essentially put themselves inside of a biosphere in the Phoenix area, which would keep them away from the public and ensure that any health problems do not spread there. And hopefully once they're inside of it, provide the sanctity of it so that nobody inside gets hurt either. But this could blow up really quickly if the players decide they do not want to isolate from their families for months potentially at a time. And so we're at a really interesting point this week as the players in MLB talk about this plan and about its viability.
And that brings us to him. Alex Rodriguez is with us here. And A-Rod, it is great to have you, and thank you for doing this. And obviously, the timing of it is extraordinary with this piece from last night from Jeff. And you heard him talking about the players. Let's start right there. The idea that the players would essentially, during this unprecedented time, have to isolate themselves away from their families for potentially several months. What would be your best guess as to how the players would react to something like that?
Well, I think right now, Greeny, good morning. Everything is so fluid, right? And we make plans and God laughs right now. So I think there are no bad ideas. I think to start thinking as a player, preparing for the earliest time possible is the greatest thing we can do. The worst thing for a player would be, hey, we think it's August, and then commissioner says, hey, we're opening things up and you have to show up May 15th. And you're not quite ready. So I think it'll be an adjustment, but we would follow suit.
One of the many things, and there's a lot in this piece, and actually these are some of the things we've talked about already. If they're going to try and compress a season and get as many games in as they can, they've talked about playing a lot of extra doubleheaders. and potentially even making the doubleheaders seven-inning games. What would be your thought on either of those? As a former player and now as an analyst, what would be your thought on the notion of playing potentially seven-inning doubleheaders regularly during a baseball season?
Well, look, I think back in the day, it was a thing of normalcy. I remember in World War II, I believe 1943, the White Sox played about a dozen doubleheaders. 1962, the Mets played 30 on their first year in Major League Baseball. So back in the day, it was something that we did all the time. As far as the seven innings, the only adjustment I would make, I would always make sure that I have an extra pitcher or two, because we want to make sure that while we're trying to expedite the season, we don't put the players in harm's way.
Yeah, that's one of the big considerations here, is the impact on pitchers. Something that actually came up, Justin Turner of the Dodgers, it's not a crazy idea for me, it's a crazy idea from an actual major league player, was that in order to keep yourself from having a long extra inning scenario, which obviously would be a real problem in this compressed schedule, is that if you played 10 innings and the game was tied, you would have some sort of home run derby where you would get maybe three sluggers from each side and go out there and do it. Now, a lot of people laughed. I have to admit, I sort of liked it. What would be your thought on something like that?
Greeny, in 2020, I love everything. The one thing we have to signal to the world, if you're a traditionalist, Major League Baseball is not for you. If we have any naughty, disruptive, crazy idea, make it happen this year. Try everything. Pilot everything. Open up the floodgates. Open up the batting cage. Mic players every single game. Put baseball, put their best foot forward. The fans want to see more. They want to hear more. And JT Turner always has some great ideas. Why not? I like it. Let it fly.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. And I wonder how other players would react. What are you hearing from players? You obviously, those of us who follow you on Instagram, we see you're playing a lot of wiffle ball out there with the family. I'm sure you're also talking to a lot of players. What are you hearing from players around the sport about where their heads are right now relative to return?
Green, I've been talking to players, owners, coaches, managers, and everybody's concerned. This is so fluid. The science tells us something differently every day. The stock market is going up and down. And I think that's how emotions are right now, up and down. Everybody has concern that they don't lose a loved one, and we just don't have enough information and data about this horrific disease. So I think right now everybody's trying to stay in shape. I have friends that are swimming a couple miles a day. I have a lot of friends that are running sprints, and I have friends that are actually playing catch with their wives and their siblings. So, you know, Greeny, in a world that people say that baseball's too long, I beg to differ. I would love to have a 5-hour game to watch tonight. I have some of my friends that are gambling on Korea basketball and table tennis. So we need baseball. We need sports badly.
I agree. I was just making a similar comment yesterday. Actually brings up an interesting thought. You know, the circumstances are obviously completely different, but some of the sentiments I feel are similar to when sports and baseball in particular went away after the events of September 11th, 2001. And I did an entire feature, an entire special on ESPN about the role that sports played in the recovery from that. I just wonder, as you sit and you consider the role that baseball might play in our nation's recovery from this pandemic, whenever and however that happens, what thoughts go through your mind?
Well, I remember, September 11th and what a devastating moment that was for this country. But I'll never forget President Bush, no matter what political side you are, to see him up there throwing the first pitch to Greeny, another Greeny catching the ball, who was a backup catcher for the Yankees. It was so courageous. Obviously, the Mike Piazza home run. These are moments like great movies that will never go away. There's the president throwing an absolute strike, a thing of beauty, and you had 60,000 people with a beautiful ovation. And it was so courageous for President Bush to do that. Greeny, I spoke to him. There he is, number 43, who caught the pitch, said, you know, that was one of the greatest moments of his entire life. But I think it's a great responsibility that we have as athletes to go out and look in a world, Greeny, that is so divided. Nothing brings people together more than music and sports. And we're missing, especially baseball, because, of course, that's what I love most.
Yeah, I was noticing that. I agree with you. That's one of the most indelible moments in recent, if not the entire history of the sport. But you see all the fans there cheering. The reality is that the likelihood here is when we come back in all of the sports, they're going to be playing them without the fans in the stands. As a player, how will that change the experience, do you think? How will it make the game different for the players and thus for those of us watching on TV without having all the fans in the stands?
Well, it's a completely different experience. I've had a lot of experience playing B games, spring training. Sometimes you go to a backfield and there's nobody there but a few scouts and maybe a few fans. But obviously communication as an infielder will be a lot better. You can hear everybody. If a coach whistles at you, you can hear them. You have to be careful on how you communicate because the other team can hear you as well. I think it'll be fine for television, but on the field, it'll be just like a spring training game, and I think players will adjust nicely. I think players want to play and fans want to watch.
Absolutely. And one last thing here. You and Jennifer, I know, have partnered with Russell Wilson to donate 1 million meals to Feeding America. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think, look, we are in a – we have a platform and we're very blessed to both be in a position to give back and help back. And it is our responsibility to pay it forward and help those that are less fortunate. There's a lot of people, as you know, Greeny, that are struggling through health, hunger, and people have lost their jobs. And the more we can do, the better to help out.
It's great to see you. It's wonderful there, of course. And it's great to see you. Thank you very much for this. We'll check in again soon and hopefully we'll have baseball games to talk about soon. Thanks very much, A-Rod.
You got it, Green. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Again, tonight, our weekly flashback to some of the most unforgettable games in baseball history continues with a magical night at Camden Yards. It was Cal Ripken breaking Lou Gehrig's consecutive games played record. It was September 6, 1995, and you'll see it tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. But I've got Shefty here for a little NFL news here. Let's run the hurry up. Shefty, you broke news this morning about Hard Knocks. What is it?
How about this, Greeny? Hard Knocks is supersizing this summer. They're going to go for the first time with two teams, the Los Angeles Rams and the Los Angeles Chargers, who will be sharing a football stadium hopefully this upcoming season, and they'll be sharing the stage on Hard Knocks. Never before been done with two teams, but now it will be. The Rams and Chargers are both slated to appear in Hard Knocks. As for Dak Prescott, the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, the Cowboys' offseason program is underway. Dak has not signed his franchise tender. It raises the question, how do you handle this if you're Dak Prescott? Are you allowed to participate in meetings? Because basically there's no contact allowed. There's no contact on the field. But he hasn't signed. He's not a member of the organization. I would imagine he's not taking part in that right now. So Dak Prescott, the mystery, the contract talks go on. As for Antonio Brown, he wants to return to the NFL this season, and he's hired a new agent, Ed Wasilewski, to help him do that. This is his latest attempt to get back in the league. Of course, there are a number of issues that he'll have to have resolved. Even if he does get back in, it is expected that the league would first issue some sort of discipline for Antonio Brown. So there are some hurdles that he still has to get through, but he's got a new agent working for him to try to help him get back to the NFL in 2020.
He has a new agent because Drew Rosenhaus distanced himself, pardon me, from AB, which is something that almost never happens. And so Ryan Clark, again, is a former teammate of Antonio Brown's, and the history between the two of you was well known. But what is your sense of his NFL future? Every time I bring up a team, someone yells at me and says that team is better off without him in their locker room. What is your sense of the chances he gets back to playing at all?
I think the chances are slim now. He's going to have to show some growth in his personal life, some growth in the way that he handles things as a mature adult man. But we all understand what type of talent Antonio Brown is. And if he can show that his behavior can change, that his intentions can change, I believe there are going to be some teams who are interested in having Antonio Brown on their team. But there are still so many hurdles that he has to get over before he can even get to the football field. But next year, you're going to start hearing his name as long as he stays out of the news, as long as he stays off of social media, because everybody knows he's going to be in shape. And when he is in shape and when he is in pads and on that grass, he is productive and successful as anybody we've ever seen play this game or the position. But for right now, Antonio Brown has to show that he's grown. This is a step in the right direction now that he has a new agent. That new agent can't fix anything unless Antonio Brown fixes himself first.
That's one of the many, many things in sports right now that we will just have to wait and see. RC, thanks. Coming up, 17 years ago, Syracuse won its only national championship with Carmelo Anthony as the star. What does his coach remember about that night? Jim Boeheim tells you live next. Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Back on Get Up, and our top story this morning, Major League Baseball working on a plan to return as early as May. It is a plan detailed by Jeff Passan in a great report on ESPN.com in which all 30 teams would play at stadiums without fans in the greater Phoenix area. Players, coaches, essential personnel would essentially be sequestered in hotels, live in relative isolation. We'd essentially be talking about the bubble city that we've been hearing about in connection to the Chinese Basketball Association. They would do that with baseball. They try and play out as much of a season as they could that way. They have the infrastructure, at least in terms of stadiums, in that area because of spring training. It's a fascinating concept. Here's Max Kellerman, who's with us. They're 14 minutes away from starting First Take. Max, you've heard it. I'm sure you've seen the piece by Jeff, which is excellent. What are your thoughts on baseball trying to come back that way?
Well, it's a great idea for any sports league that wants to come back, provided there was a little mention of robust testing. That's what it all comes down to. Because even if you have a skeleton crew for baseball, you're talking about at least 25-man roster, 30 teams. And then you look at the, you know, even if you have electronic enforcement of strike zones and everything else, with training staff, support staff, bare bones, it's over 1,000 people easily. And we've learned now that it could be 50%, 5-0, half of people with COVID-19, with coronavirus, are asymptomatic. So it really comes down, once again, can baseball get their hands on enough tests and the optics of that? While people are dying and locating where the virus is in the absence of a vaccine is of paramount importance, how does it look for a multi-billion dollar industry to get preferential treatment in terms of acquiring a lot of tests? Mike, it's great for baseball if they can do it, if they can pull it off somehow. But I really think testing is not widely enough available at this moment for it to happen.
No, not even close. But we could be talking about a month away or something like that. I mean, it should go without saying. Sometimes maybe things don't go without saying as much as they should. That anything that would compromise the safety and the health of any collection of people is not even worth remotely considering. But if that is a hurdle they could jump over, let's consider the rest of it. Let's consider the players being living in this biosphere for 4 months away from their families. The games being played in their entirety in without fans in the stands. You know, 100-degree temperatures pretty much every day throughout a season in Phoenix. These are real problems. Do you think they could make it work?
I do. I mean, I'm surprised that it is baseball that is making this push right now. You know, Dana White is doing it with the UFC and MMA. I think boxing is poised to do the same thing if a promoter, again, get their hands on some tests, because you need far fewer of them, and then you need to enforce quarantine strictly and all those things, and people have to be willing to do it without their families. So I'm surprised it's baseball that has gotten this far along the path of at least discussing it and seriously considering it. But yeah, if they can do it, it's great. Mike, how many times you and I have spoken about FDR made it very clear during the Second World War, for the kids who don't know, that was the president of the United States at that time, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, made it very clear to baseball, hey, you're America's pastime. We want diversion during this time of national crisis. So it would be great if baseball could get it together. And then, Mike, consider the kind of sliding sort of importance of baseball over time, the marginalization of baseball in American popular culture over time, especially because of competition from superior consumer products in football and basketball. Well, in the absence of other diversions, baseball takes center stage and maybe can remind Americans why it was once America's pastime. So it's great for baseball. I think it'd be great for the country. And it depends really, I think, more than would people be willing to be away from their families, because given the money at stake and everything else, not to mention the significance nationally of distracting people. But the question really comes down to, again, can they get their hands on enough tests in the next, 3 weeks? To realistically do this.
Well, I guess we'll soon start to find out. Again, Max and Stephen A. and company about 10 minutes away for First Take. Thank you, Max. We'll see you a little bit later on. Meanwhile, today is a day that a lot of people in our industry remember fondly. It was on this date 17 years ago that Syracuse completed a dream season, beating Kansas and winning college basketball's national championship game behind a freshman who was named the most outstanding player by the name of Carmelo Anthony. He's gone on to do a few things in the NBA, and his head coach has gone on to be in the Hall of Fame and a whole bunch of other things, and he joins me now, the longtime coach of the Syracuse Oranges, Jim Boeheim. And Jim, thank you very much for doing this. 17 years to the day. When you think back on that night and that run, I just wonder, what thoughts come to your mind?
Well, it's the magical moment that we all try to get to in college basketball, and I had a couple close encounters with getting there. But when you do finally get there, and to get there with freshmen, you remember that game, Jerry McNamara makes 6 threes in the first half, and then Carmelo the second half was his down the stretch. And we beat a Kansas team that had beaten Marquette and Dwayne Wade by 30-some points. So it was a tremendous win against a really good team. It's one you remember forever. You think about it, if not every day, most every day. And it replaced the tough loss we had to Indiana in 87 when we lost on our last shot in the corner by that guy, Keith Smart. Mm-hmm. So it was good to come full circle and get it done in New Orleans. Was special.
How would you describe what Carmelo Anthony meant and means to the program? You've had so many great players and so many pros come through Syracuse. It just feels there's something different about Melo and that run. What does he mean to the program?
Everything, really. You know, we did a podcast, whatever it's called, the other night, of a FaceTime thing about our championship game. He was with us the whole time. He just, the whole two or whatever hours it took us to do it, we had the whole team practically there. And he gave us the money to build our practice facility. He comes back. He helps support everything we've tried to do. And I had the opportunity to work with him on 3 different Olympic teams. So he's meant everything to us. There's a reason our practice facility is called the Carmelo Anthony Center. And you think back on it, he was here 1 year. He's shown tremendous loyalty and staying power with Syracuse basketball. He still resonates today with all of our fans, and he continues to give back. And he gives back to every community that he lives in, which I think sometimes is overlooked when it comes to him. And I'm so happy he's had the year he's had this year in Portland, getting this opportunity to play and show that he is still a pretty good basketball player. But he means the world to us, and he was only here 1 year.
Coach, I only have a minute, but I just wonder, as someone who's been around the sports world for so long and so many people are so accustomed to hearing your voice and seeing your face, if you just had any message for sports fans who may be watching this morning and going through this extraordinary time, what thoughts would you want to share?
Well, the thing I'm struck with, Greeny, every time I watch television, how negative everything is. This is not a negative country. This is a positive country. Everybody is going to do what they have to do. Everybody's going to pull together, the hospital workers, the doctors, the nurses. We're going to get through this, and our science is going to find a way to solve this crisis. And I'm a firm believer that this thing, the sooner we can get back to normal and the better for America. And we'll come out of this stronger, just like we come out of every crisis that we've ever had in this country. And I'd just like to see us start to be not unrealistic, but hopeful. And I think that's the way America is, and I think it's the way it's always been, and we're going to get through this.
Coach, it's great to see you. Thank you very much. Happy anniversary, 17 years, and we'll see you again really soon. Thank you for doing this. It's Jim Boeheim with me. Coming up on First Take, top of the hour. What message was Tom Brady sending his new team and his old one yesterday? Stephen A. and Max talk about that and more next. Very quickly, before we wrap, I have to admit something to you. I opened the show this morning by saying, good morning, I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol, and it's a Wednesday. As God is my witness, until 2 minutes ago, I thought it was Wednesday. These are very strange times, but we're getting through them together. And to all of the first responders and the medical professionals, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. I'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.